This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and it is a gorgeous, gorgeous day. I walked outside, and it was 53 degrees, and I was thinking, wow. You know, I was still dressed for 18 degrees and double hoodie, you know, with a hoodie and then another coat on, and I thought, okay, we're taking these off. We are enjoying the day today. It is episode 50. Woohoo! I actually talked to a special guest about possibly joining me for episode 52. We'll see about that. Everything is puttering along. Had a wonderful week at work. We were able to get some things accomplished that we needed to get accomplished. And it was a busy, busy week. These have all been busy weeks, but everything's moving along. So that's good. Sometimes change is difficult and a few things are shaking here or there, but so far, so good. You know, we just keep taking one step at a time. I do have the beta information back in from my beta readers for Amanda and the Skleberry Tree. And that all seems to be going fine. As always, we get a wide variety of opinions. It's good to have multiple people reading because some people like one thing and some people don't like that at all and they like something else. And if you got multiple people, you can kind of see how it all mashes together. But I've made my way through 3 or 4 beta reader material, and I'll be moving through the rest of it hopefully within the next week, and then getting the production version ready and sent off and all that sort of thing. I am, I think, on day 21, woohoo, of my challenge to go 21 days, no criticism, no gossiping, no complaining, for 21 days without grace. I have to say that there have been a little few question marks, but it's not really something I can say, oh yeah, that's a complaint. It's just been near misses. So, like one of them this morning, as I was getting my breakfast ready, I was watching a recording of American Idol from, I think, last night or the night before last. Anyways, and the women were singing, and some of them did a really good job. There were a few of them that it was just not their night. Before I knew it, I was listening to one of them just going, bad. And I didn't really say it critically. And I would say it to their face, and it wasn't really a complaint. It was just really a statement of fact. It was not good. Not good. And it was funny because the judges came through and said the same thing. Okay, that was not good. But anyway, so that's one of those things kind of borderline. I suppose I could have said not good instead of bad, but, you know, it was bad. I'm just telling you, it was bad. So anyways, that's kind of the news from Lake Wobegon up to this point. I did have another topic that I had slated for today. I had seen a game designer who had given a talk at the TED convention, TED. I don't know if you've heard about the TED conventions, but I should have done some research to find out who put these on. But they are conferences that are done periodically, I think at least once a year, and then maybe they have some different branches. They do like one on medical issues and one on innovations, and they gather together a set of very interesting speakers. And the speakers then come in and do 18 to 20 minute talks on their area of expertise. And my understanding is the last TED convention that was in February, that there was a talk that was put on by a Jane McGonigal, I think is her name, about using games to help us solve life's problems. And it looked very interesting. I had actually seen an interview by her that looked very interesting. And so I was doing some research thinking, oh, that'd be a good topic because there's some interesting takeoffs on that. And I was ramping up to do that. And while I went out to try to find the video on the talk she gave, I discovered that it wasn't on the TED site yet, because they do the conferences in February, and it takes them a little time to actually get the conferences uploaded. So that wasn't up yet. But I did come across another speaker. And as soon as I saw the title of her talk, I thought, okay, hey, this is interesting. And the more I read up on her and the more I listened to her talk and listened to a couple other talks, I thought, yeah, there's something. This is pretty cool. This could be fun to talk about. The title of her talk was The Opportunity of Adversity. And the speaker's name is Amy Mullins. Her name is spelled A-I-M-E-E Mullins. Has accomplished a lot of things in her life. Started out life in a more difficult position than many of us find ourselves. She was actually born without fibular bones. Now, I think that's shin bones, because I read it in a couple of different places, and it was called shin bones, but when you look at all her official release stuff, it's called fibular bones, which means that, as I understand it, there really was not much support she was going to get from her legs. And so as an infant, she was a double amputee, and they cut off what there was of her legs below her knees. And so that has been part of her life for as long as she can remember. Undeterred, she began running, I think when she was in college. She began running, started to run. And she went on to compete at national and international levels. As a champion sprinter, she'd had a pair of legs created that were some kind of carbon fiber tungsten something legs that she runs on. And she was she had a double major at Georgetown in history and in diplomacy, and she actually became the first double amputee to compete in the NCAA Division I track and field. In addition to that, Amy Mullins did some modeling. She turned in an amazing, for a legendary runway show for a designer called Alex McQueen. She actually showed some of the legs in one of the videos that she used for that, where they had made her these hand-carved boots as prosthetic limbs that had vines and all kinds of really cool carvings on them. And she said, I walked down the runway with those, and nobody knew those weren't my legs. They all just thought they were wooden boots that had been created. So some cool stuff there. She actually did a little bit of acting too, and those types of things. It's interesting, because as I was talking to a friend about it this past week, the friend actually said, well, now, wait a minute. How could she be doing modeling and all that stuff if, you know, she's a disabled person, double aim? Don't they have to have just the right look? And I said, you know, you should probably go out to the website and just type in Amy Mullins and see the images that come in, because I think you will see she has just the right look, because, frankly, she is a very attractive woman. But beyond that, and beyond the fact that she has been a double amputee and has been a runner, she actually did a TED talk in 1998 about running on prosthetics, and running on these special prosthetics had been designed for her to allow her to run faster. And to hear her talk about it many years later, I think it was 10 years later, she gave a talk at the TED Talks as well in 2008. She said the TED Talks really sort of revolutionized her life and put her on a whole different track, and gave her access to a lot of people that could think in different ways about prosthetics. But the talk, and I'll talk a little bit about some stories that she told in the 1998 talk as well. The talk that she just did at the latest TED was on the opportunities of adversity. the opportunity of adversity. And I thought she had some really, really valid things to say out of her experiences that are far beyond what some of us have experienced. Although the tenor of the experience and the adversity that she has faced in her experiences can be very similar to the adversities that we face in our experiences, and we can take some of her approaches and certainly apply them. She said in her speech that for some time she had been uncomfortable with the phraseology of overcoming adversity. That people would come up to her and say, "How do you overcome adversity?" And she'd say, well, you know, I'd give them the standard answers about keep pressing forward, don't let anyone tell you you can't do, you know, that kind of thing. But she said, "I have always been somewhat uncomfortable about that phrase, overcoming adversity." And she said, "I finally started figuring out why I was uncomfortable with that." And I thought she had a very good observation. When we speak of, and I'll just put it in my own terms because I'm driving, I have some notes, but of course, I don't want to have a wreck. So I'll put it in my own terms. She had come to the realization that the reason she had trouble with the phrase overcoming adversity is because it couched adversity in a connotation of being not normal. That once someone overcame adversity, that their life became normal by whatever definition you use for normal. And she decided in her life that she would take a different tact in imagining adversity. That adversity was not something to be overcome so that you could get back to normalcy, but that, in fact, adversity was something that you went through so that you could continue to grow and continue to be alive and continue to learn. And so adversity would be something that you would embrace and not necessarily forget about as soon as you made it through the adversity. And it wouldn't be something that would be shunned. It would be something that would be integrated into the person that you were. And that you wouldn't just set it aside afterwards and go, "Whoo, boy, I'm really glad I got through that. Okay, great, moving on." But that adversity was just a normal process of life. And when she was talking about that, I thought, you know, that's very good. Because, in fact, there is an amazing example in Christianity about this kind of relationship to adversity. I immediately started thinking about the very interesting image of Christ raised from the dead and yet still having the scars in his hands and in his feet and in his side from the crucifixion. Because the Bible records that when he appears to his disciples afterwards and he's trying to convince them that it's him, he holds out his hands and he says, "Look, see my scars in my hands. Here, look at my side. Do you need to put your hand in? Do you need to put your finger in the hole I've got in my side?" And that's very interesting to me because Jesus at this point, according to the Christian belief system, is in his what we would call the glorified body. He's in this body that can move through walls, that can appear at moment's notice. It can apparently ingest nutrition, but doesn't necessarily need to ingest nutrition. And so he has his body that we believe that he's going to have for all of eternity, and yet he's still carrying these scars. And what that tells me is that Christ did not look on the crucifixion as just something he needed to get through. But it was part of the process that he had embarked on. And having embarked on that process and finished that process, he wanted to remember, which is pretty cool. that the process, and my dad talks about this in terms of how Jesus's existence changed because of the incarnation. Because from all appearances, what actually happened with Jesus Christ is that before he was incarnated, he was omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, all of those things, but in something in the mystery of the incarnation, even after he was crucified and resurrected, he still had a body. There was some part of his phenomenon that is localized now. In other words, his experience of the incarnation has irrevocably, irreparably, and unequivocally changed him. And that's okay. And when you put those kinds of things together with Amy's speech, we get a much different, in my opinion, a much different view of adversity. That the flesh is going to try to tell you, I can't believe you're going through this. Oh, someday I'm going to be through this, and then everything's going to get back to normal. Okay, well, what is normal? Is normal for us never having any challenges? Is normal for us being just be able to get up every day and do whatever I want to do? Okay, well, it is within those challenges, and it is within the pressure and stress of those challenges and in the competition and moving forward that when we come through those things and we quote-unquote win at those things, it is within that adversity and in that challenge that I personally find a great amount of enjoyment. I have mentioned a couple of times that I'm working on a super secret project. I haven't said much about it. I've described it a little bit. And I'm still not going to describe it a little bit because this is a ridiculously simple idea that doesn't seem to exist in the marketplace. And everyone I show it to goes, okay, that's cool. And everyone I show it to says, you know, that's a marketable product. Okay, but here's the thing. I have never put out a mass market trinket product like this before. I mean, we're talking about a product that's made out of plastic that probably is going to sell for between $10 and $20. And frankly, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I don't have the resources to get this done in terms of the technical skills that I need to create an injection molded plastic product. Now, I could look at that and say, it's too hard, and just give up and walk away and say, I just want stuff that I know how to do. I'll program, I'll write, but this is too hard. Or I could recognize that the challenge here, the adversity here, the difficulty that I'm going to experience as I move forward is going to make my life richer. Whether or not I actually put this project out, whether or not I quote-unquote succeed at this project. Many, many years ago, we had some friends that the wife decided she really wanted to start a resale clothing business. She was a great garage saler. She had stockpiled a bunch of stuff, and she had decided, you know, I should just start a store and I should sell this stuff. And they were going to have to take out a little loan to do it. They found a property and they were discussing it with me. And they said, yeah, we're going to have to take out a loan for about $3,000 and try to do that. I said, do it. And they looked at me. I said, absolutely, do it. Go ahead, move, do it. And they looked. I said, look. I said, the amount of stuff you are going to learn just in the process of actually trying to run a business is going to be worth $3,000. I mean, if you just fall flat on your face and you just lose this $3,000, that's recoverable. You can get that paid back. But the education that you're going to get through that $3,000 is going to be absolutely amazing. So just do it. And that's really the way I feel about this super secret project that I'm working on. I feel like I'm going to throw some money at this. I've targeted between $3,000 and $5,000 to throw at this project. I'm going to learn a whole lot of stuff when I'm doing this project. I'm going to meet new and interesting people. It might even be possible I'm going to get in this and somebody is going to rip me off. You know, because I can't ramp up production fast enough to meet demand. I'm getting my mail. I mean, the very real possibility is that I'm going to get out there. I'm going to introduce this thing to the marketplace. People might be interested. They might not be interested. And I may sell a few, get nowhere near recouping my cost, and then somebody who has more resources and who has better capabilities and more connections may just put out their own knockoff of my project and just completely take over the market. That may happen. If that happens, fine. This is going to be an adventure for me, and I'm going to learn a whole lot of stuff going through whatever adversity, whatever challenge, whatever quest may be represented in this. But I'm not going to walk away from it just because it's hard. And I think, I'm backing into my garage, I think that's really the cool thing that Amy Mullins is getting to in this idea of the opportunity of adversity. To understand that adversity is, in fact, a quote-unquote normal part of life. And then when we hit adversity, the goal is not simply to run away from it and hope to never have to face anything like that again, and then get back to our very, very comfortable existence where we're just doing what we want when we want to do it. But instead, that we should embrace the adversity that comes in our lives, embrace the circumstances of our lives, embrace those things that we encounter, and not look at them as necessarily bad things, but look at them as opportunities. That's very cool. Amy Mullins did, at the end of her speech, introduce me to a poem that had been introduced to her by someone else. It's a poem by the poet Hafiz, I think is his name. He was actually a disciple of Sufi, which is a mystical arm of Islam. Now, you know, don't back up and go, oh, Islam, we can't listen to that. Don't back up yet. Because you know what? God's truth bubbles up all over the world. And when I heard this poem, I went, yeah, okay, that's truth. That's truth. And don't get real syntactically correct. Just understand what the idea is. Because this is a really important, important, important idea. And I think thinking about adversity, thinking about the opportunities of adversity, thinking about the things that God, quote unquote, allows to come into our lives, or that God has set the stage for, because our lives are within this very interesting, dynamic environment, that sometimes things are easy and sometimes things are hard, that if we'll take all of that and bundle it up and think of it as an opportunity, I think this poem actually captures something extra that there may be in that as well. That God may be breathing in all of the circumstances of our lives for a very specific purpose. If you want to look up this poem, the poet's name is Hafiz, Hafiz. And the name of the poem is "The God Who Only Knows Four Words." Every child has known God. Not the God of names, not the God of don'ts, not the God who ever does anything weird, but the God who only knows four words and keeps repeating them, saying, come, dance with me. Come, dance. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.